Hello and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are continuing our study in the book of Genesis. Last week we knocked out Genesis chapter 21, and this week we are probably in what would be the most famous chapter in Genesis. I think one that pretty much anybody who's ever been in church will have known about. If you grew up in church, raised in church, even if you were recently saved, I'm sure that this chapter has come up in discussion for you during that time period. And it is going to be, of course, the chapter of Abraham going to sacrifice his son Isaac. Some people call this the great testing of Abraham. I've heard some people refer to this chapter as the Old Testament representation of Christ. There's a lot of things that are going on in Genesis chapter 22. There is, of course, this call of faith on the part of Abraham. God tests his faith immensely. This is where he gets his props throughout the rest of the Bible for being a man of great faith. I would say truly, before you could give Abraham that title that he is given in the New Testament of being a great man of faith, probably was not until after this part of his life. Especially since we saw all kinds of issues and problems in Genesis chapter 20 and in chapter 21 of him getting his life back together again, starting to kind of get to the point where God wanted him to originally be. A few other things that we are going to see in this, of course, as well, is we are going to be talking a little bit about the picture, the similarities between what's going to happen with Isaac and, of course, what would happen with Christ. But we're also going to get into a little bit of a deeper discussion as we're going through this chapter about what it is for you and for me as an individual child of God, as an individual servant of God, what it means to truly be obedient, what kind of characteristics will come into that. And so we are going to go ahead and get started. Genesis chapter 22 says, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am." So right off the bat, there's a couple of discussions we have to have in verse 1. I've run into quite a few people here lately or recently that when talking about this chapter or talking about chapters in general where this kind of language is used, where there seems to be this new concept swirling around with some of God's people, that God tempts us. That is not at all true. God does not in any way, shape, or form lead his people into a situation where they are going to sin. 9 times out of 10, when we see the word tempt in relation to what God is doing, it has the idea of a trial, a test, these kinds of things. And so what happens is that after everything that's happened in Genesis chapter 20 and 21, God comes and tests Abraham. And a lot of people wonder, okay, well, why in the world, though? Why now? Why is God testing Abraham now? Well, you need to remember and recall that in Genesis chapter 20, we had our issue with Abimelech, right? We gave Sarah to wife to Abimelech. We had Abraham slip into this old pattern of sin, this old pattern of having little to no faith whatsoever in God. And, of course, God has to step in and fix that situation as quickly as possible because of what Abraham has done. We did not want the redemptive process of man to be messed up due to a lack of faith by one of God's people. And so God steps in, and, of course, Abimelech, if you remember correctly, at the end of chapter 20, he rebuked Abraham and Sarah for their behavior and for what they did. And for the fact that they led these people into sin. Well, then in Genesis chapter 21, while Abraham still did the right things, in Genesis chapter 21, if you remember, We're also kind of cleaning out Abraham's closet. We have the old sin of Hagar and Ishmael that we have to deal with. And then, of course, we have some issues of sin and problems still lingering from our Abimelech situation in chapter 20 that we needed to get right and take care of. And so what happens is that we have all of these things that are brought to Abraham's attention, these sins that God is like, we need to deal with this problem, Abraham. This is something that is going to continually get in the way of you being able to serve me. And guys, there's many times in your walk with God where God is going to bring to your attention this problem or this problem or this problem, or maybe even a conglomerate of problems that are all encased together in the same layout, such as having little to no faith in God. And you, once you have dealt with those things, God is going to test whether or not you have truly learned that lesson. So here it makes complete sense that after all of these things happen in Genesis 20 and 21, that God comes to Abraham and tests him on whether or not he has learned this lesson. And notice that he just calls to Abraham. It said, and he said unto Abraham, God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, behold, here I am. If you have a King James Bible, I know that's what I go through. I know that's one that pretty much everybody's grown up with. Don't have any problems with other Bible translations, by the way. I've had a few people ask me about that, if I have hatred against other Bible translations. No, I just grew up with the King James, therefore I preach from the King James. But 9 times out of 10, I spend time doing what I'm about to do with you of this is what this means in 20th century English. If you're holding a King James Bible, though, you're going to notice that what Abraham says, there's some italicizing going on. That means that there was a word added in to bring forward a cultural meaning, okay? Maybe it's not complete a translation in English. We had to add some words in to get across the idea of what's going on here. But God calls to Abraham. He's about to test him. He calls to him, get his attention. And the English translation of this kind of takes away from what happens. What happens is that Abraham, it's the idea that he is standing at attention. It's here am I. That's what he says. Here am I. I am ready to serve is the idea. I've seen some people that have looked at this and said that there was also some things with the language where this had the idea of what a servant would say if they were called upon to attention. Don't know if there's any validity to that or not. But the idea is that Abraham hears his name and it's, I'm ready to serve. Abraham has gotten to this point through everything that's happened in the last chapters that we have seen, where now he has a faith in God that is ready to do whatever God asks him to do. And guys, to be able to be a good servant of God, you have to have that level of faith. There's many, many times that God's people will talk about wanting to get to a place where they're better at serving God or where they have a better relationship with God. And that all of that starts with believing that what God tells you to do is not just the right thing, but the best thing, and is what you're supposed to be willing and ready to do, regardless of how difficult that may be. Abraham has reached a point in his life where he knows that if God calls, it is time to serve, without question. And it says, and he said, take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. So Abraham answers God and he says, I am here. I'm ready to serve. Here am I. I'm ready to go. And God immediately lays out this proposition to Abraham. He says, you're going to take your son, your only son Isaac. And a lot of people get really caught up on this too. Oh, no. He also had Ishmael. Ishmael was not the promised son. Ishmael was not an act of God. He was not a blessing of God. That was a result of Abraham's sin. Guys, when God's saying this, he's not lying about the biological claim of Ishmael to Abraham being his biological father. But what he is saying is that that is the son I promised you. That is the one that I wanted you to have. So you're going to take your son, your only son Isaac, meaning the only one that I promised to give you, the one who is the miracle child, essentially speaking, whom you love, and you're going to go into the land of Moriah, and you will offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. So God's proposition to Abraham is you're going to take your son Isaac, your son who you love, the son who you've waited on, the son who I promised you, and you're going to go into the land of Moriah, which is near the area of Jerusalem, and you are going to offer him there to me as a burnt offering. You're going to sacrifice his life on the mountain that I will tell you to go to. Now, when we get into this, there's a lot of debate as to what exactly was going on. Why was it that God requested this to test his faith? And some people go, oh, well, it's the love of a father and a child. Yeah, there is that. There's some people that, oh, well, it's because they wanted to, you know, kind of show an Old Testament representation of what was going to happen between God and his son for mankind. And yes, there is a little bit of that as well. But also, what we tend to forget is that the problem of Abraham's faith up until this point has rested on whether or not he believed God would fulfill what he promised him he would, which was that if you go to a land, I will show you, I will bless you with many children, I will make great nations out of your children, and through you the whole world will be blessed. That is the promise that Abraham has struggled to maintain his faith on up until this point. It is that promise that is now, standing in front of Abraham. He can see the fulfillment of that promise coming in the son Isaac, who was the promised child. And God is testing Abraham, not just for these other applications that we can make and look at, but because the source of Abraham's failure up to this point is that he has not believed God would fulfill what God said he would do. And now, here in front of him, the promise has been fulfilled, Isaac is here, and God is challenging whether or not Abraham truly believes God's going to do what he said he would do. And and a lot of people, of course, look at this and they're like, well, this should have been an easy one for Abraham. God is completely against human sacrifice, dot, 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 dot. Yes, but that had not been fully introduced and talked about up until this point. That's going to happen more when we have Levitical law and things of that nature. And so the main point of this test is Abraham's faith has always failed where he had to believe God was going to do this promise the way God said he would do it. So if we're going to actually test whether or not Abraham is where he needs to be spiritually as a servant, then we're going to have to aim at where the problem has always lied, and that is with whether or not God is going to let him keep this promised son who would be later on become nations and then later on, of course, would bring the Messiah into the world. And when we look at the way God phrases this, he makes sure to drive home that this is not just that, you know, he's going to potentially be missing out on the promise of God if he kills this son, but also he stresses the relationship between Abraham and Isaac, that he loves his child. And so this is a twofold test. We're not just testing our faith in God, but we're also testing the willingness to be obedient, even if it means sacrificing or giving up someone or something from our life. Another problem that many of us have. There's a lot of believers that are willing to do whatever God wants them to do, unless it involves spacing themselves from a familial tie or a relationship or a friendship or something like that that's causing trouble in their walk with God. And so there's this double whammy that's coming for Abraham as this learning lesson is going to go forward. And it immediately says in verse 3, and Abraham rose up early in the morning, saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up, and went unto the place of which God had told him. Abraham does not ever question God. He doesn't respond anything to God. He gets up the following morning. He puts together what would be necessary for the trip to where they were going, and he begins to go on his way. And I can only imagine what's going through Abraham's mind at this time. You know, he's covered all of his bases. He's done what he was supposed to do in the last couple of chapters, cleaned up, you know, some of the things that were still lingering in his life. He sees the promise being fulfilled by God, and now God has come and asked him to do what is going to seem like a very strange request. I mean, yes, there's also the, well, this is my kid, you know, you want me to sacrifice my child. There is that aspect, but if you take the time to sit back and be a logical individual from time to time, this just seems very strange. Why now all of a sudden would God come and ask me to do this? I mean, we've gone back and forth and argued and fought and pushed and we've done all these things to get this kid here. Now, why in the world does he want me to go offer my child, the one that we've had all this big to-do about? I just don't understand how this would make sense. And so I can see Abraham going through all of these hoops, going back and forth, trying to wrap his mind around what it is that he has been asked to do. And see, guys, when you're in a position with God where you try to think about something spiritually and it doesn't make sense, and then you try to think about something logically and it doesn't make sense, when God puts you in a conundrum where you cannot begin to fathom, how is this going to work, God? That is when you know God is doing something that's going to require you to believe in and trust him. And I know that Abraham fully reached this point long before he ever got to Mount Moriah, because look at what happens. It says, then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. By the time Abraham reached the place he was headed to, he had already gone through the thought processes and the shifting of things to realize this was something that was going to require him to be obedient and faithful if he was going to see it through and was going to do what God wanted him to do. Guys, I'm not even going to be the kind of pastor that'll look at you and say that, you know, God will make everything clear to you. No. There are some times in this life that you just have to trust God and do what God wants you to do. And it may become clear later on in life once you've done it. And then there's sometimes it may not be clear at all. You may absolutely have no idea what's going on. And something that we as God's people tend to forget is there's times that we feel like we are on a need-to-know basis, but there's a lot of times that we just don't need to know. We just need to be willing to be obedient and faithful. And Abraham realizes by the time they get to this journey, he looks at these servants he's brought with him, and he says, we're going to go worship, and you just stay here and watch the animals, and we will come back to you again and go home. As essentially what Abraham says. By this point, even though he didn't know what God was going to do or how God was going to do it, what method that God was going to use to bring this about the way that he wanted to, Abraham understood that at that present moment, he didn't need to understand what was going on. He just needed to be faithful and obedient. Guys, the number one thing that a child of God should learn before they die is to be faithful and obedient. I understand that it's a whole lot easier to say that than it is to do it, okay? I'm not under this guise that I'm going to tell you just need to be faithful and obedient, and you're going to just go do it. That's not at all how that is going to placate in your life. I understand that it's one thing to say it, and another thing to do it. But friends, if you truly will sit back and think about just how little control you have over anything in the world, and just how little you actually know about what's going on or what's going to happen or what may be, you will very quickly realize that you are better off being faithful and obedient than you are to try to maintain things in your own strength, because there's a million things that you don't know about. As I'm sitting here doing this podcast, I know that I've got XYZ planned this afternoon, but I also don't know that while I'm sitting here doing it, somebody won't try to break in my office through my front door. You don't know what's going to happen. The sooner you realize that you know a whole lot less than you think you do, it's not as hard to be faithful and obedient to a God who already knows every single thing that's going to be and has been and will be. Abraham realizes by the time he gets to this mountain, I don't know what God's going to do, but I'm going to be faithful and obedient regardless and let God take care of this situation on his own. And so he begins his journey towards this mountain with his son. It says, "And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, and laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son." So as they are walking away from this group, Abraham demonstrates, I'm going to be faithful and obedient and trust God to figure this out. And as they are going, his son Isaac, who I'm sure had seen many sacrifices by this point in his life, some speculate that he was 10 years old to 13. I've seen some say 14, 15. It really doesn't matter. The point is that he was old enough to understand what was going on. And as they're walking, Abraham gives Isaac the wood to carry. He takes the knife and the fire. And I've heard many people come in and be like, just and this is where the archetype or metaphor, whatever, of what Jesus Christ would do comes into play, because Jesus carried the source of his own demise to Calvary, the same as Isaac carried the source of his own demise. We can go into that full picture, and yeah, I would agree that that picture is there, that we can see that there are some things that are going to happen with that. But the biggest part of what's going on here in Genesis 22 is focused around Abraham being willing to be faithful. And so as they're going, God allows Isaac to further push this matter. Guys, if you think that going at that building your faith and being obedient, that when you've resolved to do those things for God, that there's not going to come another round to try to break that spirit down or to test that desire or to test that willingness, you're completely wrong. Part of the battle of being a servant is getting to the place where you're willing to be obedient and faithful. The second part of that battle is being just to persevere in that obedience and faithfulness. When I was in seminary, we had a lot of young guys that were, of course, getting there at the same time that I was. And at that point, it's kind of funny to think about now, because it's been, 7, 8 years since seminary. Been a little while. I think I'm starting to kind of get old. For those of you doing the math at home, they go, no, he's about 25 years old. That's not old. When you're a pastor, that's old. I don't know how we last as long as we do. Those guys that are in there for 60 and 70 years, I take my hat off to them, because, whew, sometimes it can be an interesting feat. But it's been 7, 8 years ago. We're all 18 years old, out of high school for the most part. There was a couple older ones sprinkled in there in their first year of seminary. But And when we got there, all of us had that idea. We're going to be faithful and obedient. We're going to take care of it. We're going to get this done. We're going to go through seminary and finish this out, and we're going to learn the Bible, and we're going to be good preachers, blah, 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 blah. Okay? By the end of our first year there, we went in with 20-something students in my class. By the end of that first year, there was about four of us left. Guys, it's not just determining in your mind that you're going to be faithful and obedient, let God lead you, regardless of the fact that it may not make sense, or you may be confused, or you don't know what's going on, or why God's doing it. But it's not just getting to that attitude. It's about pushing through, trusting God that He was going to do what He said He's going to do. As they're walking to the mountain, Isaac, the boy who's about to be sacrificed, looks at his father and says, "My father." And he says, "What is it?" "Well, Dad, I've been around for a while and seen you do a few of these. And we've got the wood, you've got the fire and the knife, but we're kind of missing the lamb. Where is the sacrifice? Where is the animal that we're going to offer to God?" And Abraham gives an answer that just it's so profound, but it's also, I know, overdone. A lot of people talk about this, but it says, "My son, God will provide Himself a lamb for a burnt offering." Abraham, as he is going, he has decided, "I'm going to be faithful and obedient. I'm going to trust God, even though this doesn't make any sense, even though, from a spiritual standpoint, a logical standpoint, I have absolutely no idea what it is God is trying to achieve at this moment. But I'm going to just be faithful and obedient." He doesn't just get to that place. He fully trusts God to preserve him and his son. Guys, you can't just be someone who, "All right, I'm going to do what God asked me to do." You have to trust God through that trial. There's a lot of us that we start at the beginning of the race and we're like, "All right, I'm going to do what God wants me to do. I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to go." But you have to maintain that same spirit of faith and trust through the whole trial. I told my wife, I said, I feel like God prepared me, because I was born and raised kind of an old country boy. All right, and she's probably on here listening to that going, "Oh dear Lord, please don't tell them that." I was raised backwoods, hillbilly is all get out, okay? My high school, we graduated, I think I had like 70 people in my class, which I can make fun of her though, because she only had like four people in her class. She was a private school Christian kid. I was raised literally in the back hills, okay? But one of the best things about being raised in the back hills, for those of you that don't know what that is like, is that we fish and we hunt. All right, and there are some very important lessons that come from that. One is you get food that night. So there's lesson number one: who doesn't like to be able to eat that day? The second one, though, is patience. All right. I can recall when I was, 10 years old, is when I went out on my first hunt with my father, okay? And where we hunted at, you'd hike about a half a mile to maybe three quarters of a mile up into these mountains up here in northwest Arkansas. And you'd go up into that mountain, and then you would probably go another good quarter of a mile to a half a mile, to where the stands were, to where the deer were, and these kinds of things. And I can recall all the times that I was really young, 10 to probably 15, 16 years old. We get up that morning, and man, I was rearing and ready to go. We're gonna get our gear on, we're gonna get the guns, load the car up. You're ecstatic, the adrenaline's rushing, you're looking forward to what's going to happen when that squirrel or deer or rabbit, whatever, comes out. And you're just ready to go. And then once you've made that first half a mile walk, it's not so much fun anymore. You're carrying a 30, 40-pound pack on your back, and you got a 5 to 10-pound gun on your back, depending on what you're using, or a bow, or whatever. You make that half a mile up that hill, man, and it's like 50-degree angle straight up. You're not having so much fun by the time you get to that hill. By the time you get there, you're going, oh, why in the world am I doing this? You start to lose sight. It starts to become a little more difficult. And then by the time you make that next half a mile walk, you're as happy as you can be because you get to sit in your stand, which when I say sit in your stand, I don't mean like these are highfalutin deer hunting guys there are these days that have these little boxes and heaters and they're drinking their coffee and they named Spot and Bucky and then the other deer out here in the woods that's going to come in. They've been feeding them since they were a year old. I mean, we get find a tree and you're hustled up on the ground and the wet, the cold, the snow. You're literally hoping to the good Lord above you don't freeze to death under this tree on the ground. And then a bobcat or a bear or a boar or any of those things doesn't come out and find you also while you're sitting under said tree. You get there and you think you've made it to home. You know, you kind of get this second wind about you. It's like where Abraham gets to the hill, he sees it afar off, and he's, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm ready, God. I'm ready to serve. Well, then you get sat in that stand. It's 10, 15 degrees outside. You're up in a mountain. You can see your breath the whole time you're there. And you're just waiting and waiting and waiting. Just like Abraham, as he's walking up this hill with his son Isaac, that's far off, waiting for the moment where what is supposed to happen, what we've come to do, is going to happen. And the whole time you're sitting there waiting, you start to get apprehensive, you start to get antsy. You start to look around those woods and you're like, oh, well, maybe they're not going to come out today. I may just be wasting time. I may just need to pick up and go home. You know, I mean, it's cold. It'd be nice at home, but it's cold up here. This isn't easy. This is hard work. It's the same struggle that Abraham's dealing with here. And while you're sitting in that stand and your body starts to settle down from your 1 to 2 mile walk, you start to get colder. The elements start to get harder. Your body starts to try to get numb. You're sitting there waiting for something to happen that you know is going to happen a split second. If you don't do it right the first time, you're not going to get another opportunity. And as Abraham has made it to his stand, he's walking up this mountain. The elements start to set in. Things start to get harder because Isaac brings to his attention just how difficult what he's about to do is going to be. And guys, before you ever even get to that mountain, before you ever get to where you're going, whether it's hunting or you're looking at what's going on with Abraham, you have to determine in yourself that when you know it's going to get hard, you're going to trust God and go through it anyway. Abraham hears what Isaac says, and the reason that he can say, I know God will provide, is because he fully believes that God will do it. That if he puts in the obedience and the faith, if he's willing to do what God's asked, there's going to be some form of a blessing that comes from what's about to happen. No different than when we'd be going into that deer stand. We knew that if we put in the work and we put in the time and we sat through the misery, we were going to get to take home dinner that night. That's the exact same attitude that Abraham has to garner within himself here. And he has to trust God fully. It's not just about getting to the place where you're willing to start the test. It's about believing in God enough to see the test through. And Abraham saw it all the way through, didn't he? Because they get there, they build the altar. All the while, I know Abraham's sitting there going, okay, God, what's going on? What are we doing? You know, how's this about to go? I mean, seriously, you're not going to let me go through with this, are you? And then they build the altar, and they lay the wood. And as they're laying the wood, I can see Abraham in his mind, all right, God, come on. what's going on here, you know? I mean, I don't know what you're gonna do, but I really feel like this isn't how we're supposed to do this. And then after he's laid the wood and the altar is built, there's nothing stopping him from the next step, and he binds his son Isaac. And some people look at this and they say, and Isaac went dumb and dead. We don't know that. Isaac might have tried to fight him off for all we know. All we know is that he binds Isaac, his son. All the while, I can see in his mind, okay, God, what are we doing? What's going on? I'm trusting you. I'm being faithful. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to persevere through this, but I have absolutely no clue what you're doing right now, God. As he lays Isaac on the altar, come on, God. What are we doing? I'm trusting. I'm going to be obedient, but I don't know what you're doing. I want to understand. He pulls the knife, and same thing going through his mind. Where's God at? What are we doing? Has the knife to his child's throat. He's literally about to sacrifice Isaac, guys. There is no other step but then to pull the blade. In his mind, God, what in the world are we doing? What's going on? I'm going to be faithful and obedient, but God, I would really appreciate it if you could give me a semblance, give me a sign of what we're about to do. And does God do that, guys? No. No. Because, see, guys, this is the thing. There's so many times God's people are looking for a neon light in the sky. And, friends, you don't need a neon light. You just need to be faithful and obedient and persevere in that faith and obedience. We always tend to doubt or get this idea that God's going to change his mind at the last time. And that's never happened, guys. There's never been a time God has changed his mind. God doesn't need to change his mind. He knows everything. It's not that he's going to change his mind. It's rather that there's going to come a time where he is ready to step in and change the course of how things are going to go. We have to be faithful and obedient. We have to determine that no matter what the situation is, we're going to be faithful and obedient. No matter what it is God asks us to do, we're going to be faithful and obedient. But we also have to get to a place where we trust God enough that we're going to persevere in that, in what we've said we're going to do, in that faith and in that obedience. And when the time comes for the test to shift, when the time comes for something to change, when the time comes that God feels like we need to shift the direction of what we're doing, he'll step in right at that moment. Because the moment Abraham moves in, it says, and the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. I can only imagine the relief of Abraham. He has his knife on his son's throat. He's about to slay the boy and go about all the steps of a burnt offering. And the moment that knife touches skin, the angel Lord, which is essentially Jesus calling out to him, that's the same language that's used here as what was used with the story of God coming to his tent before they go destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Calls his name out and says, Abraham, Abraham, stop, don't do it. Here am I, again, the same answer. I am here. Here am I. I'm ready to serve. It's that same answer. Guys, he maintained that faith and obedience through the whole test. Even here where there, I can imagine the relief and everything. He still is, I'm ready to serve. Whatever it is that God dictates, I'm going to do. It's the same relief that you'd feel when you're up there in the deer stand and you're freezing your hind end off and you've been sitting for 6 or 7 hours and you finally see the deer come out. Or in my case, when I got older and me and my dad went to separate sides of the mountain, you heard a gun go off and you're like, oh, thank you, it's over. The misery is over. Dinner has been grabbed and accomplished, okay? That's the relief that he has. The test is over. I'm ready to serve you again, God. And he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, by myself have I sworn, saith the Lord. For because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. And it came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, Behold, Milcah, she also hath also borne children unto thy brother Nahor, Huz his firstborn, and Buz his brother, and Kemuel the father of Aram, and Chesed, and Hazo, and Pildash, and Jidlaf, and Bethuel, and Bethuel begat Rebekah. These eight Milcah did bear to Nahor, Abraham's brother, and his concubine, whose name was Rumah. She bare also Teba, and Gaham, and Tahash, that one always gets me, and Ma'akah. And so, Abraham is faithful, he's obedient, he perseveres in that, meaning that he continues to trust God through it. And guys, when you go into a test with God where you determine you're going to be faithful and obedient, and as you're going through that test, you're trusting God, trusting God, trusting God. No matter what comes your way, you're trusting that God's going to deal with that situation. By the time the test is over, that you will be greatly blessed for it. And I'm not talking about, oh, you're going to get money, or God's going to give you a Mercedes, or whatever foolishness is being taught these days. What I'm talking about is that you're going to get a spiritual blessing. There's going to be a lesson that's learned, a lesson that changes your relationship with God drastically. For Abraham, by the time this was over, do you think Abraham ever had a problem again with trusting in God? No. Because he had witnessed with great power that God could not only be trusted, but that God would always provide at the right moment. This test taught Abraham a lesson about God that many of us to this day still need to learn. That if we'll be faithful and obedient, and we'll trust through the whole situation, God will always step in at the right moment, and He will provide. He will take care of the situation. He will get us through the test. And friends, that is the best thing a child of God could possibly ever learn about the character of God, is that He can always be trusted and that He will always provide at the right moment. Now, as we're getting here, this is the end of Genesis chapter 22. There's a little bit of stuff thrown in there about his brother and his kids and these kinds of things. And that's going to come into play a little bit further down the road, you will see. But that is Genesis chapter 22 in a nutshell. For any of our new listeners that are on here today, we'd love to have you guys with us, praying for you. If you ever need anything, let us know. Do what we can for you. For those that'll be that are following, that come back in, listen to the recording later, good to see you guys. Hope everybody has a great weekend and a good week, because the recording goes out Monday. So all those that have that are not here, it's by the time they listen to it, it's week for them. For those of you that are live, it's weekend. But I hope all of you have an excellent week, excellent weekend. Of course, revisit Genesis chapter 22, and make sure to look over it, glean it, ask those questions. For any of our new listeners, if you go back to the very beginning, we did a full survey of the Bible, and we talked about the history, the culture, kind of the basic overviews of what every book is going to cover, what it's going to be about, who it was written to, who it was written by, when it was written, all these things. Because the main purpose of this podcast is for anybody that's listening to learn how to study the Bible on a deeper level. What questions to ask, what to look for, what words should stand out to you. Just kind of trying to teach people to have that mindset. When I was going through seminary, I had a lot of pastors and people that, oh, well, you keep your tool shed at home and you just preach to them what the message is. I don't believe that. One of these days, things are going to get very ugly according to our Bible. Men like me, and if you're on here and you're a pastor, men like you are going to be thrown in prison. We're going to be killed. There's going to be persecution. That it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And if we're not teaching people how to study the Word of God and dwelling that knowledge of the Word of God into our flocks, then they're going to be completely without and have no clue which way is up or which way is down when those men are taken away. So that's the point of this podcast: teach you how to study the Word of God, to give you some application about those chapters, kind of give you some overview, some other perspectives and things that come into play. But I hope all of you that are live have a great weekend. Those of you that come in later on the recording, have a great week. If you need anything, you can drop me a comment in the little box thingy that's on here, and I'll message you back. Some of you found me on Facebook, whatever, doesn't matter. I'll talk to you, answer your questions, help you out best that I can. Praying for all of you, and of course, as always, get out of here and go study.